Welcome to Creative Maine, an hour-long monthly program produced for and broadcast by WERU 89.9 FM Blue Hill, Maine, and at weru.org. This show considers the making of craft, fine art, food, literature, music, dance, museums, and any other form of creative expression here in Maine. We also discuss topics of global cultural significance and interest. My name is Adina Salmonson, and I am your host for this monthly exploration of all things creative. Should you have comments, questions, input, or suggestions for the show, send them to info@weru.org. Please list Creative Maine in the subject line. The life of the arts is a test of the quality of a nation's civilization, so said JFK. As a lifelong musician and crafter, I am thrilled to be presenting my areas of interest and passion to you on our wonderful community radio station right here in my Orland backyard. On today's episode, we delve into maker spaces that provide all of us with the facilities and the tools to engage in our own creative pursuits. I chat with Eric Lovejoy, Justin Hughes, and Brandon Lieberthal from the Bangor Makerspace, Catherine Devereaux, the marketing manager of Waterfall Arts in Belfast, and Drew Hook, the operations manager of a fabulously inventive makerspace, IMRC Center, at the University of Maine. Welcome to Creative Maine. We have three representatives of the Bangor Makerspace with us today. We have two directors, Eric Lovejoy and Brandon Lieberthal, and we have the president, Justin Hughes, here to talk about their project and what it's all about and what it means for you. So welcome to Creative Maine. Please tell us about your organization. Tell us, what is a maker space and how and when did Bangor Makerspace get started?
Yeah, sure. So the Bangor Makerspace is our tagline is a community workshop. So the idea is that it's membership run. We have about 25 members currently. They all pay dues to keep the space up and running, but it's more of a community asset where the local community can come in, work on a project that they may otherwise not have the space, the tools, or the expertise for. A makerspace is generally just about a lot of people gathering in one space to work on projects and be creative, and the sky's the limit there.
So when you say projects, give us examples of the breadth of projects that your members come in and work on.
So we have a lot of more tech-minded members. So it's either old computers that they're looking to rehab, programming projects, electronics products, soldering, things like that. But it's also woodworking, art-related projects as well.
Great. So how did you get started? When did you first open your doors?
Eric, better option for that one.
I'd like to do this one. We first officially opened in, September of 2020 during the pandemic. That was awesome. As an initiative, the Bangor Makerspace has been an ongoing project. It kind of started with the main hacker club. It started with a bunch of similar groups with the same sort of goals, and eventually accumulated into the Bangor Makerspace. So it went from a lot of random meetings in bookstores or on university campuses, and now we have a space to actually meet.
Yeah. So tell our audience a little bit about you. We have three gentlemen here, so you can take turns. Who are you? What were your paths to this point, and what sparked your passion for this organization?
So I can only speak for myself.
This is you know, Brandon speaking. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
It was near the end of the COVID lockdown period. I was feeling very lonely and isolated, and I was just looking online for places to make friends. I heard about this Bangor Makerspace through a friend, and I came to their first meeting. Everyone was so welcoming. They're so encouraging. They taught me how to use a 3D printer. They let me use all their woodworking equipment. I had a really good time. It was the first time I felt connected after like a year of lockdown, and I've been coming ever since.
So your craft or your creative outlet is what, Brandon?
Like woodworking. Like I make cutting boards and furniture, and I also 3D print little toys now.
Oh, cool. So, Eric, how about you? How did you come to this?
I make stuff. I make everything nonstop all the time. I've got a background in electronics and electrical engineering. I make all sorts of electronic nonsense.
How did you get introduced to the Makerspace?
Oh, I've been part of the other groups that were sort of leading up to the Makerspace. So I was a member of the main hacker club. And we, you know, I was just in the right place at the right time as part of the larger group. And so I just kind of ended up here.
Okay. And it makes you happy. It sparks joy, as they say.
I really like making stuff. Yeah. That's what I like to do.
So Justin, how about you? How did you get here, and what sparked your enthusiasm for the Makerspace?
Well, it by pure coincidence, I had met the previous president, Michael, at Martin's. We were both looking at electronics things at the time, and I mentioned it, and he decided, hey, this person probably would like to join a space like this. So I came the next week and been here ever since. I think that was about 2.5-3 years ago. My main kind of area of expertise would be more woodworking. I don't come from electronics or programming or a computer background. So woodworking was my main thing, and then been introduced to electronics and other things by just becoming a member here a couple of years ago. So yeah, more on the art-related side, woodworking and other mediums. So
I'm getting a sense that it's not only a place to make things, it's a learning space as well, which is great. So that leads me to the question, who's your clientele? Whom do you serve? Who are your members? And can anyone avail themselves of your facility, or do you need to be an organization member? And what does it take to be an organization member?
We serve anyone in the local community. Anybody is allowed to come to our meetings. We hold regular meetings on Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. and anyone can come, use our equipment, get advice. It's a very welcome atmosphere. So if you come in with a little project and you're like, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know what to do next, you know, there'll be at least a few people who are really happy to help you out. We also hold regular weekly events, like we hold events for computer programming, for tabletop gaming, sometimes we hold meetings for video game programming.
Oh.
If you want to become a member, you get access to the space all the time, 24/7, and you just need to pay a monthly fee.
Okay. So you can come free of charge to the meetings, but in order to have access to your space, you need to pay a dues fee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you have a gallery or anything that for output of your members?
The whole place is my gallery.
Yeah. So we don't have a well-constructed gallery per se. A lot of times what people do is they'll build projects, they'll leave them here. Our space, like Eric said, our space has become the gallery. Yeah, exactly.
And so you were saying that you have events open to the public. I did a quick perusal of March's calendar, and there's some very interesting things. There's miniature painting. There's a book club. Can you talk a little more about some of the events that you have going?
Yeah, certainly. So currently, actually, as we speak, in the other room, there's a miniature painting and tabletop gaming event going on. So every other Sunday, we do, most people would know maybe the name Warhammer. It's a small miniature tabletop game. And the idea is we play, we build, we paint the miniatures on every other Sunday. So that's fairly, it's been fairly popular here in the last 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. And then our book club, we've been doing that once a month. We just decided that we needed to read more. We needed to read more outside of our comfort zone. So every month, one of our members of the club picks a book. We all read it, discuss it the next month, and so on and so forth.
So does the person who nominates the book lead the discussion? Is that how that works?
Generally, no. I mean, everyone, it's just more or less a free-for-all. We have a lot of people here that like to talk a lot, and so that's certainly helpful.
So you said a few things about electronics and woodworking, but what are some of the other disciplines or media that are available for members to use?
So really, like I said before, it's kind of a free-for-all. So I guess this might be kind of a little somewhat of a tangent.
Yeah, like, oh, wait, no, not that.
So we're all of us like to just make, and we latch onto hobbies, and we buy all the stuff. We do it once or twice, and then generally the stuff ends up here. So as far as what we have access to is like leather working. Eric and I both have dabbled in leather working in the past, and all the materials end up here. Same thing with, you know, lino cutting for printmaking. That's something that I got interested in. Bought a bunch of stuff and, you know, did it once or twice. So that stuff ended up here.
We have a whole room full of 3D printers. Mm-hmm. That the members are free to use.
Yeah, laser cutter, Ur-2, a mm-hmm. variety of drawing machines. If you want to make a drawing machine, I'm here to make one.
Yeah.
I've made a whole bunch.
We have a bunch of acrylic paint.
Yeah, right, so you said something about having a sewing machine there, and
yeah,
we exactly. Got acrylic paints. We got all sorts of paints. Sometimes I paint a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm kind of burnt out on the painting. We do have the things for painting. We got a laser cutter in the other room.
So it's growing because every time somebody brings something over that has to do with a different making hobby, then it just becomes part of the space, right?
Yeah, exactly. And that's really the biggest part about it is, like I said, we're kind of a blank slate. Whatever you want to do, if you have the drive and ambition, to be honest, you know, you're going to find three or four other people that either have done that medium or that want to. That's kind of the biggest driving force is a community of people that are both willing to invest the time and effort into learning a new hobby or a new medium. So. Mm-hmm.
Fun.
Yeah,
so
a lot of people donate or lend their own equipment. Like I was building a table and I needed an electric nail gun, and someone said I have an electric nail gun, and they brought it in, and I was able to use it.
So it is very supportive. And can you just put out the word, hey, I need X piece of equipment? Does somebody have one? Can you bring it in? And that's
exactly.
Mm-hmm, and that how it works. So is Bangor Makerspace thinking of expanding? Are you good the way you are? What's next for you?
We'd like to expand our membership. And if we could someday get into Bangor, that'd be amazing. Rent is tough. We have a pretty sweet spot back here. It's nice and quiet. We got plenty of parking, which if we were inside of Bangor, like that wouldn't be the case.
So you call yourselves Bangor Makerspace, but you're actually in...
We mean the greater Bangor area.
Are we in Herman?
Yes, we are located in Herman.
I could throw a rock and hit Bangor. Okay. we're right there.
Don't do that, though.
So, yeah, in the future, the biggest push for us right now would be to keep gaming membership. We would love to move into a standalone building. That's kind of the biggest long-term goal of ours. So we can incorporate more things like pottery and welding and things that maybe a little bit too dangerous to do in a spot like this where we have, you know, multiple conjoined businesses. But yeah, space is the limiting factor in a lot of things that we want to do currently.
A lot of people have asked us to work on cars and trucks, and we just don't have the room for that. We can do some light sort of assistance, but we don't have a garage, for example. We can't like get vehicles in here. Where if we had a larger space, that could be something that could open up. We don't know.
Gotcha. So how is your space funded and supported? I know you have some dues, but do you have a fundraising campaign going, or is that a little too hyper planned for you?
Right now, currently, it's membership driven. Our dues pays for rent and it pays for electricity and internet. Right now, we don't have a whole lot of other money coming in. We don't really push as far as donation campaigns. But yeah, right now it's completely 100% membership driven. So
we are looking at renting out the space to other groups. So, for example, if someone wants to teach an art class in our space, we would be interested in renting out the space to them for a night.
Tell our Creative Maine listeners how they may find you, how they can get involved for their own making and camaraderie, and maybe even contributing.
Yeah, I mean, the first step is join us for a Tuesday meeting. Every Tuesday at 6 is when we meet. Right now, we have a couple events coming up in the next month or so. Right now, we want to teach people, you know, how to use a vinyl cutter. That will be the first mini workshop. A lot of people, seen Cricut machines, but they haven't interacted with one personally. So we have a couple here at the space. We'd love to teach people how to do that. And then in the next weeks preceding or after that event, we'd like to do a more woodworking focused, maybe, you know, cribbage board workshop. So we provide the wood, we provide the laser cutter to engrave a design. And you would go home with a cribbage board. So yeah, to reiterate, Tuesday meetings, those are the best times to come check out the space, hang out, talk, maybe work, you know, bring a project to work on. You need some assistance on.
So what's your address there so people can find you?
Yeah, 34 Freedom Parkway, suite number 2 in Herman. So Freedom Industrial Park. Right.
There's a big sign. You can't miss it.
Yeah.
Okay, and your website for the fans?
BangorMakerspace.org.
Okay. And so if somebody has questions, can they come to any one of you three for information? How does one find
you? Get on our Discord server. Discord server is our primary means of member communication. It's where someone is always there outside of like 3 a.m. pretty much any time of day. Someone's online and can, you know, kind of tell you what's up.
But yeah, more traditional means of communication. Go to our website. There's links to our Facebook where you can message the directors. Also, our email contact email address is there, contact@bangormakerspace.org. So there's a number of different ways to get in touch with us.
Great. Well, that's perfect. Well, thank you so much, Eric Lovejoy, Justin Hughes, and Brandon Lieberthal. I really appreciate your time today coming on and telling us all about the Bangor Makerspace. Thank you so very much.
Thank you as well.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Catherine Devereaux, to Creative Maine. You are the marketing manager of Waterfall Arts in Belfast, which is a wonderful institution currently celebrating its 25th anniversary, I hear. And you fit right into the theme of the makerspace world, as well as many, many other things that you do. So I was hoping that you could tell our listeners, what is Waterfall Arts and what do you offer there? And then maybe a little brief history of the organization, its origin story, if you will.
Well, thank you for having me today. Waterfall Arts, we are dedicated to making the arts accessible to everyone through our exhibitions, workshops, events, and maybe most notably our community studios. These are shared public spaces where people engage in ceramics, printmaking, and we now offer an analog darkroom photography studio. So Waterfall Arts has nurtured self-expression. Waterfall Arts started in 2000 in Montville, Maine, at Kingdom Falls, but the story starts a lot longer before that. In about the 1830s, 1840s, artists and creatives started moving to this area. In the 50s, a group founded the Haystack Mountain School of Crafts, which thrived at Kingdom Falls in Montville for 10 years before moving to its current location in Deer Isle. And then in 1995, once more, this group of artists came together to see like where the future would hold for this organization, like what they wanted to do with it, what they envisioned. And finally, in 2000, we formed as Waterfall Arts at Kingdom Falls. And starting then in 2000, with just 78 students and 15 classes, it grew to a peak of 35 courses and 300 enrollments by 2005. And then in 2006, we moved to where we are now at the former Governor Anderson School in Belfast.
Wow. That's exciting. And I had no idea that it was the same group that founded Waterfall Arts that also founded Haystack, which is, of course, well known for nurturing emerging professional artists. But Waterfall Arts is more for the education and nurturing of, I don't know if you would call it amateurs, but people who want their lives to be enhanced by the arts. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. At our mission's core is the belief that art belongs to everyone, that we're all creatives. We all have that power in us, if you want to call it a power. But we engage our creativity every day in our decision-making, our critical thinking, the way we build our lives, the way we engage with others. And so holding on to that, we want to bring creative spaces to everyone so that they can experiment with that creativity, form and engage new sense of self-expression. And, you know, it's for professionals and what we call non-professionals, I guess, in that sense.
Mm-hmm. When you're feeling that creative urge, would you say that the first thing you'd really want to do is take a class, or would you jump right into the makerspace? How does that work?
Well, so the makerspaces, they don't function like a formal class setting. You have what we call studio monitors, and these are professional artists who work in the studios, often on their own body of work at that time. And they're in charge of maintaining the equipment, safety. They do answer questions, but really it's the community. So we recommend that you have some sort of foundational knowledge for the medium, like ceramics, printmaking, if you just want to drop in. But we do offer introductory classes in all of our studios for those who appreciate the more formal learning setting.
Would you suggest that people do that to learn how to work the equipment? Because there's some darkroom equipment is kind of intense. I wouldn't know the first thing about what to do with a darkroom. And, you know, you have to kind of know about how to use the print making machines and so forth, yes. I would think.
Yeah. So that's what the studio monitors are there for. And, you know, if you have a little bit of foundational knowledge, you can always come in for a studio orientation and we can just show you around. Our doors are open all day, and just come inside and see what it's like. Explore. There's always someone there who's really happy to see you. And we just want you to feel like you belong here. And we want you to feel inspired, and we want to inspire you. And so I'd say just drop in and see what it's like. Or if you prefer the safety of your home, visit our website, waterfallarts.org. There's a bunch of information there. And you can also see what classes are coming up, sign up for the community studios if you're interested.
Wow. So a little bit more about how you are developing a community of artists in a moment, but I want to know about you, Catherine. So tell us a little bit about you and your own creative journey and what life experiences have brought you to Waterfall Arts.
I have a long story, like many people do, but I've always been passionate about where creativity and community come together. My husband and I moved here in 2013, and that was a whole other career, though it feels. But with my background in philosophy and art, I was automatically drawn to Waterfall Arts upon stepping foot in Belfast. And I'm from a fairly, well, it doesn't seem large now, but from a large city in Florida. And we didn't have anything like this. And so I was extremely excited to, in any way I could, be a part of Waterfall Arts. And I took classes with my own artwork. I also did a summer at the art market, which was a wonderful experience. I met so many awesome people. And then eventually this position opened. I feel like there was a long journey to get here that maybe is not as exciting. But when I saw the opening for marketing manager here, I just knew it was for me and that it was my chance to be a part of what Waterfall Arts is doing.
Do you use your own art in the marketing aspect of things?
I do. It's wonderful. Yeah. You know, the graphic design, organizing the newsletters. And my favorite thing is just the writing and the communicating with others, like engaging in social media. I love seeing how what I do for Waterfall Arts brings people together. That's extremely important for me. And it's extremely important for me to be an advocate for art. Again, because I think, you know, we're all thinkers, we're all creative, we just need that space.
And being with other like-minded people, I imagine, really brings that out in one. So
it does.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the Waterfall Arts community and how that also relates to the community studios. I know you find a professional in there to help you with stuff, but do you find other makers hanging out and doing their thing at the same time?
Yes. And yes. Yeah, it's wonderful. You know, the ceramic studio is always a buzz. We've got several professional ceramicists and, I mean, amateurs who are in there, you know, making their own work, making their own dishes, making gifts for others. You bounce ideas off of each other. You know, we're all in it together. We all are kind of not maybe having the same experience, but the experiencing the same thing from different angles. So it's always really cool to see like what someone else notices that you don't, or we can be really hard on ourselves. And I think that is why a lot of people don't think they're creative. And when you're in a space that's designed to fully support you in your creative journey, you know, there's the presses are there, the paper's already there, the ink's already there. There's, you know, it's just you and your work. Nothing else is standing in your way except for yourself. And so it's really helpful to have another artist there who maybe understands that experience and can help you pull yourself out of it and, you know, just play. It's just so important to play. And so it's good to have like a play accountability buddy sometimes.
Well, this begs the question for me, who, I know you were saying it's for anyone who can walk in, but who can avail themselves of these studios and how do you go about it?
Well, realistically, there is an age limit on our studios. So most of them are ages 15 and up. Okay. We do offer a kids only ceramics community studio on Wednesdays and a more general young artist studio. This is just in a creative space with all kinds of goodies for kids to play with. And that's also on Wednesday afternoons. And those are specifically for kids.
And then how do you go about it? How you say, well, you know, here I have some acetate and I've etched it. Now what do I do?
That's really funny because we actually also, our studios are as environmentally friendly and environmentally sustainable as we can make them. So it's specific, like printmaking is specific to copper. You couldn't, for example, etch zinc plates, but just to throw that out there.
Because my husband is into printmaking, and he learned on acetate, so he'd have to learn another skill then.
Oh, he could, no, that's like dry point etching. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Intaglio he was doing.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. I couldn't think of that word. Yes. If you have your plate and you are looking for a press, you can, the studio spaces are small, so I would recommend going onto our website and registering ahead of time just to save your spot, but you can always drop in. Just visit us in the office or go upstairs to the studio, and the studio monitor can avail the information down to us. But the best way to be sure that you have a spot in the community studios is by visiting our website.
And signing up. Okay. So how should artists prepare before using the studios? I know that on the website, it emphasizes that the studios are staffed with helpers, but they're not teachers. So what would you suggest someone prepare before using the studio? Certain base knowledge.
Yep. So you can always just drop in any day that the office is open and come see us, and one of us can show you around, give you a little bit of an introduction to the presses, for example, or, you know, show you around the dark room and down into the ceramic studio if you'd like. The studio monitors are there to answer your questions, and they're there to help and assist and work with any equipment needs. But if you really want to have a good foundational understanding and spatial awareness of our studios, I recommend just coming in and getting a personal one-on-one orientation. We're really happy to answer all of your questions. And the studio monitors are happy to work with you and help you anyway as well. It's just less, we don't require that they provide instruction. And it's more of a community space, a shared, like a co-working space, where everyone gets to make art. So
how about the dark room? You were saying that the dark room is a new thing. So tell us a little bit about your dark room space.
So we have an analog dark room. It was shut down for a few years due to equipment needs. We needed to upgrade the ventilation, and it's a lot of work. A lot of what we do is volunteer based, and a lot of what we do, you know, you wear a lot of hats, and, you know, not everybody is a ventilation expert. So it took a little while to work things around, but now we have the studio up and running, and now that we've installed better ventilation, cleared out all the pinholes, our dark room is fully outfitted. It's a multi-use space for just analog photography. You can develop black and white film, print 35mm negatives. We also have four enlargers. So I'm not a photographer, wow. So I don't know.
Me neither, but I know it takes a lot of chemistry. Because I know that with the printing, you were saying the ink is there and the, you know.
Yeah, so. No, you're so right, though. Oh, some of the chemistry is available to purchase during,
Okay. That makes sense.
Okay, so we do have some chemistry available for photographers to purchase ahead of time or during their studio hours while they're here. But any alternatives, we would need to authorize that because it is a green studio.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, we'll have another discussion on the green aspects of art another time, but I like that idea. So tell us how our Creative Maine listeners can find Waterfall Arts. You mentioned the website before. I'll have you mention it again. How you can learn more and interface with Waterfall Arts, either as an artist, an appreciator, a volunteer, or a teacher even.
Thank you for asking that question. Hey, the next time you're in Belfast, come see us. We're at 256 High Street, just outside of downtown. It's a wonderful arts district, lots of galleries. You can drop in anytime. Tuesday through Friday, our hours are 10 to 5. And then on Saturdays, we're open 11 till 3. In our gallery, we have a gallery right now showing our annual Young Artist Takeover. This is Waldo County's best and brightest young creatives showing their work. It's a really beautiful thing. Otherwise, visit our website, waterfallarts.org. You can contact us through there. sign up for our newsletter. That's probably the best way to keep in touch and up to date on what's happening in the community studios. And there are always direct links that take you right to the registration page. And be sure to follow us on social media. We're at Waterfall Arts on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Very good. Well, that's excellent. I hope to stop in there, and I'm going to drag my husband in too with his print work.
And
yeah, that's wonderful. I'm so glad to know more about it, and I'm sure our listeners are too. Many of them are if they're within listening range of WERU, they're probably within very short driving distance of Waterfall Arts. So I think that's fantastic.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time and being on, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Talk to you soon.
Maine is alive with activities, presentations, workshops, concerts, and all manner of cultural endeavors. At this point in the show, we highlight a few of the many calendar items going on around the region. The Electron Microscopy Lab, in partnership with the Innovative Media Research and Commercialization Center, invites you to Image Your Research, a unique gallery event showcasing the intersection of art and science, exploring the beauty of scientific visualization through stunning electron microscopy images. This event offers a rare opportunity to appreciate the creative fusion between research and visual storytelling. This event takes place on March 26, 2025, from 4:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., at the IMRC Center, University of Maine. For more information, visit imrccenter.umaine.edu. Join the Penobscot History Center virtually on March 27th at 6 p.m. for Climates of Change in the 18th Century, a talk given by Emma Messwild about how settlers in Maine responded to the environmental changes known as the Little Ice Age. To register for the free Zoom link, visit the PenobscotHistorical.org website. The Bangor Band will present its annual Members Memorial Concert on Sunday, April 13th at 3 p.m. at the Peaks Auditorium in Bangor High School. The band will celebrate the start of its 166th season with music both familiar and new at this free event. The band will be back at Peaks Auditorium for an inspiring collaboration with the University of Maine Chorale and the Acadia Choral Society on Tuesday, April 22nd at 7 p.m. All Bangor Band concerts are free and open to the public. For more information, visit bangorband.org. For a more complete listing of events, visit our website, weru.org, and click the Community Calendar tab. If you would like to add an item to the community calendar, you may follow the prompts on the calendar page and submit your own event for the list. If you have an event that you feel is particularly pertinent to Creative Maine, send a note with the details to info@weru.org and list Creative Maine in the subject line. You are listening to Creative Maine on WERU 89.9 FM and on weru.org. Next, we speak with Drew Hook of IMRC Center at University of Maine.
Drew Hook to Creative Maine. You are the operations manager of IMRC, and I'm going to take a deep breath for this one. The Innovative Media Research and Commercialization Center at the University of Maine. So how did I do?
Thanks for having me. You did great.
Okay. Well, welcome. I think for this show, which is about makerspaces, this is one that is kind of like no other I've ever heard of. And it's very interesting and innovative, and not to coin a phrase. And I think that our listeners will very much enjoy being enlightened about this. So please define IMRC and tell us a little bit about its history. And I know you opened in 2013, so maybe tell us a little about whose brainchild was it?
So if we go back a little bit, some of your listeners and some folks in my family ate at Stewart Dining Commons at the University of Maine. So that commons was decommissioned as a dining hall in 2013 and reconstructed and practically unrecognizable in many ways. There's still a concrete ramp near the front entrance going up a few feet. There's some features. I mean, the portrait of Dean Stewart in the foyer retained the name Stewart Commons in recognition of his many years of service to the students at UMaine, but created a new facility, half of which is the Wyeth Family Studio Art Center under the Department of Art, and the other half of which is the Innovative Media Research Commercialization Center under research. First opened in 2013 after being constructed with funding support from the Maine Technology Institute, the University of Maine, and the Intermedia Master of Fine Arts program, which at the time was being led by the late Dr. Owen F. Smith. And building upon the goals of all of the folks involved, strengthening alignment with university mission, vision, and values, IMRC became a core integrated University of Maine research center in 2018 under the direction of Dr. Ali Abedi.
So you say integrated. Tell us what that means.
Core integrated, so coordinated operating research and entities, or CORE, UMaine loves the acronyms, is a centralized repository of research equipment under the research arm of the university so that folks from all disciplines can approach research equipment as part of their practice or study or either curricular activity or co-curricular activity. And so the IMRC is core integrated in that we have all of those resources available across disciplines at the University of Maine. So everything from the labs to the classroom spaces to the multifunction spaces at the facility are available to all.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about you. I know that we enjoy hearing a little bit about whom we're hearing from. So, Drew, tell us a little about your background and your life experiences and what led you to this position at IMRC.
I grew up in Lincoln, Maine, so about 45 minutes up the highway from here, currently in Glen Burn, pretty close. It's just west of the university. I went to the University of Maine as a new media major, music minor, for a short time, and I wanted additional audio engineering opportunities and had transferred to the University of Massachusetts Lowell for a degree in audio engineering. I tell the students I work with now that if the IMRC Center had been on campus, I likely wouldn't have transferred. And because of the resources within the center, I would have probably scratched that itch for me. But in terms of my path from there led to UMass Lowell, and I had some really excellent mentors at Corbin Lewis and Jamie Tagg working at UMass Lowell. It helped me work my way through school in live event environments. And then after that program was over, I started working for Bergstrom Music and New England Audio Tech, which are companies in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, respectively. And I had the opportunity, good fortune, to tour with Rostrum Records, Top Dog Entertainment, Warner Brothers artists for around 2 years after school. And I stopped touring after meeting the love of my life and realized I did not want to be apart from this person. And applied for position at Boston College, event logistics and media technologies there, and worked there with another mentor of mine. I've had so many.
Luckily.
Yeah, very, very lucky. Jonathan Sage at Boston College, worked with him for 7 years with a fantastic team. And we supported around 3,500 events a year there. And during that time, I had support from work and at home to complete my graduate degree in leadership and administration with organizational development thrown in there as a focus. That all this to say that nearly every hat I've had a chance to wear along my career has a relevant hook in the office, my office at IMRC Center. These are all things that, they're all things that I call on in my day-to-day for working with students, working with events, helping folks access equipment and resources and spaces to be creative or follow their passions.
That's great. I think it's a lucky person indeed who could say that. I tell my students that nothing is for nothing. So it doesn't matter if you started in a university and you worked on a major that you subsequently dropped, it's still part of you and it will come back to serve you at some later date. And I think that's wonderful. And this leads me to my next question, which is one of the most interesting things to me about IMRC is the intersection of arts and technology in this common ground of creativity. Art, music, and performance all have a home at IMRC. And can you discuss how creativity lives in engineering, for example, and the more technological aspects of what is done there?
So I believe that creativity is kind of crucial component of humane engineering and engineering in general. Their engineers are constantly exploring, experimenting, iterating on ideas, seeking out innovative solutions to complex problems. And these same processes and methods are also mirrored in many artistic practices. Similarly, a lot of methods rooted in creative and artistic thinking can enhance engineering design and problem solving, fostering unique perspectives and diverse approaches to problems. But more overall, I think blending the creative and empirical knowledge, things like imagination and logic together, can lead to innovative breakthroughs, deeper understanding of the world. That goes for, you know, the histories of visual, cultural, conceptual, social questions, combined with all these technical aspects. We get a more comprehensive view of the problem and for how we're going to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of folks are doing that experimentation. We want to give them a place to do that and equipment to do that with at the IMRC Center.
So what are some of those making spaces like? Give us an idea of what we're talking about when we say the maker space at IMRC.
So there's four main categories that we've made the categories for how we establish the training tracks. And those are in addition to the classroom spaces and the multifunction rooms at IMRC. But we also have four main makerspace labs. So the prototyping lab, the fabrication lab, the electronics lab, and the audiovisual lab suite. And so those four different makerspaces correspond to four different training tracks that we offer. So if somebody's interested in the equipment and the spaces in the audiovisual lab suite, maybe they're not immediately as interested in the prototyping lab. Now, that's just to simplify making the trainings more bite-sized. And so that if there's an area of interest, somebody can pursue that area. Now, a lot of students and a lot of users at IMRC kind of do all of them, and their idea bounces from space to space. But maybe I should back up. The prototyping lab is full of 2D and 3D printing equipment. So primarily there's a 3D scanner, extrusion and stereolithographic 3D printers. Extrusion, for those 3D printing enthusiasts listening, my understanding of extrusion printing is that it's the layered plastic. So it's what a lot of folks think of when they think of 3D printing, which is just layers on layers on layers printed one layer at a time. And the stereolithographic 3D printing is the resin that is being targeted by UV light very carefully targeted so that it hardens the salt crystals inside the resin and it creates a print that way. And so there's much more to it. And I'm the operations manager. We have wonderful technicians at IMRC that could speak more broad, less broadly to the details of what these printers can accomplish and what kind of prototypes can be made there. The 2D, the 3D printing. When I talk about 2D printing, that's the large format 2D printer. It's like poster printer. It prints on poster paper, vinyl. It can print on canvas. We've had it print on newspaper. We've had it print on maps.
Wow.
People can feed a variety of different things through it. And for folks interested, it's a Canon 4100S.
Okay, so I can see where this would be an amazing tool for a sculptural artist, for example, to use. So one thing that I'm interested in is, do you only serve UMaine students, or can people in the technology sector and the business sector collaborate with students? And who do you have to be, or who can you be to go there?
Well, we serve students, faculty, staff, and community guests. What is community guest? Anyone that wants to come in and learn more about the facility and the resources. So technology enthusiasts, established businesses, folks just starting out, working to learn more about commercializing their interests or hobbies across prototyping, recording, design, fabrication, you name it.
So if you're an artist and you're like, well, what can I do to make money while being an artist? This might be a great resource to explore.
Yeah, certainly. And we've got established pathways to self-service in the labs, assisted service, and full service, depending mm-hmm. on the needs. And oftentimes folks will come in with the goal of some assisted service and then eventually want to do it themselves. And mm-hmm. that's ideal, because that's the best way we can scale for them anyway.
That's great. And it's learning on a very personal and useful level. So I think a lot of people probably avail themselves of that. So can one go to UMaine part-time to learn at IMRC? And are there any adult extension type programs that would find a home there? And can electronic musicians rent recording time? All of this is very exciting.
Yeah, the short answer is yes, yes, and yes. The places that I would urge folks to maybe start would be, I guess, depending on the listener, and the University of Maine Division of Lifelong Learning and the University of Maine Cooperative Extension would be great places to get started, either, you know, part-time at the university or getting involved with university programming, certificates, things like that.
Mm-hmm. So could, for example, a new business in Bangor come to maybe train its people in new technologies?
Yes. The answer is yes. There's a pathway for that. So we're non-competitive with surrounding businesses. So because we're funded from the federal and state money as part of research. So folks want to come to us and use the facilities. We have a non-competitive structure of pricing to use the facilities as a local business. That's and so wonderful. Folks can come in and get started.
I wonder how many people didn't know that this resource existed. That's phenomenal. So are there any public events or gatherings that our Creative Maine listeners can attend?
So I've got one in particular coming up that I think would be an interesting way to explore the facility and some of the events there and see some of the student work. And that's March 26th from 4:30 to 6:30. In the afternoon, it's called Image Your Research, and it's with University of Maine Core Electron Microscopy Lab and students from across multiple disciplines. It's going to be set up like an art gallery with folks that have taken electron microscope images of their research that will be up on the walls in art gallery format, and it's being judged by folks that specialize in judging either photography or art or some sort of aesthetic practice. And it allows the students to recontextualize their research across the discipline into kind of an art gallery environment. And it's open to the public. We're going to have refreshments, treat it like a gallery opening for these students.
And, well, that's exciting.
Yeah. So please come to see that and come take a tour with me, see the lab spaces. I'm always thrilled to bring folks through and show them the equipment.
And if you want to learn more about IMRC and all that it can provide, what is the best way to learn about it and contact you?
So in terms of the other events and things that we've got going on, because we serve so many different departments, groups, and individuals across the university, the best place to see all of those things compiled or grouped together, I guess, in this case, would be the UMaine events calendar. So that's calendar.umaine.edu/events. And then we can be reached directly at imrc@maine.edu or 207-581-8822. During business hours. And our website is imrccenter.umaine.edu.
Well, thank you. This has been tremendously interesting. I wish I could talk to you for another hour, but this is wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to our Creative Maine listeners.
Thanks, Adina. Come by the center and talk as long as you want.
Okay. And good luck with all the future holds.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much to my informative guests, Eric Lovejoy, Justin Hughes, and Brandon Lieberthal from Bangor Makerspace, Catherine Devereaux from Waterfall Arts, and Drew Hook from IMRC at University of Maine. Our theme music is composed and performed by Ariel Chapman. If you have questions or comments for me or any of our guests, please send them to info@weru.org. Please write Creative Maine in the subject line. Please join Creative Maine at WERU 89.9 FM or on weru.org for another eclectic episode on Thursday, April 17th at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time, when we will learn about the art and craft of maple sugaring. Thank you so much for listening. This is Adina Salmonson, wishing you a wonderful month of the arts and crafts that enrich your life and bring you joy.